This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It is Wednesday, so Wednesdays with Wes returns. I know the schedule has been a little bit wacky past couple of weeks with games during the middle of the week. Still games during the middle of the week, Thursday, Friday, but we decided let's get back in order here. Wednesdays with Wes. Brett Ciancia will join us a little bit later on in the podcast. And look, we'll do a wrap-up podcast after the national championship, but you know, just a quick shout out to you guys. And this year, it's been awesome. Ryan Hunter, Wyatt Tomchek have been our producers, and they've done an amazing job. And, you know, our YouTube page continues to grow as of right now, just on the cusp of 1,000 subscribers, which is incredible considering we started that beginning of this season. The numbers have never been better. For the podcast on iTunes and Spotify. So we'll do a wrap-up podcast. Maybe I'll cry and we'll talk about it, but we're not going anywhere. We got another season. I'm sure we'll have even more off-season discussions to get to. But, you know, it's just funny you think back to the start of the season, where we were, our preseason projections, and now we've got Indiana, Oregon, Ole Miss, and Miami closing it out here to wrap up this season. And I don't think many of us had those tickets in pocket, especially Indiana being the power that they are. Miami after their win over Notre Dame in the month of September, but then they hit their lull, everything that unfolded with Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. And Oregon was one of those kind of odd teams where I felt like, and I'm not calling anyone out, I was not a big believer in Oregon. I bet against them in the final week of the regular season, but they were kind of a team that had some preseason hype, but some sharp guys out there wanted to fade them. They lose their game to Indiana. They win the overtime game at Penn State that doesn't necessarily age all that well, but they beat USC, and they, of course, beat Washington to wrap up the regular season. Also, quick note, as I mentioned, Washington, we'll have to do a portal episode here when the portal closes. Utter madness right now, and not surprising. The Damon Williams news coming out on Tuesday is pretty stunning. Hearing that he had re-signed at Washington and now he has pulled from that agreement. Washington's talking about legal action. You saw Sam Leavitt at a LSU basketball game with Lane Kiffin, and LSU reportedly is in on Damon Williams. So buckle up. This is going to be a wild ride over the next week or so in the transfer portal. Indiana apparently not going anywhere, as we saw. Not a surprise with Kirk Cignetti and the way that he coaches. He's an elite coach, and now he's got some backing financially. Well, I guess I shouldn't say now. He had it last year. Fernando Mendoza wasn't free to come to Bloomington and ultimately win the Heisman Trophy. But we will try to make sense of the portal, and no real need at this point, because we're a betting podcast, to talk too much portal right now. But I think a January episode is certainly in store to rehash and recap the portal, the biggest movements, and maybe some of the early movement from a future standpoint. So we will dive into that, but I'm keeping an eye on the portal, certainly, and how crazy it has been. Before we get to Wes, a couple of things to note here, and we will talk about this with Wes, but big news comes out on Tuesday. Oregon's going to be without Jordan Davison, one of their leading rushers. We talked about the rushing attack of Oregon with Dan Rubenstein yesterday on the podcast. I thought Dan's analysis on the Ducks, a program he knows extremely well considering he's a Oregon alum. They're going to be without 667 rushing yards and 15 rushing touchdowns. He is out for the semifinals. So a big loss there for Oregon. They have a couple other guys already in the portal in Makai Hughes, the transfer from Tulane, and Jaden Lamar. So they're really down to basically one running back heading into this game. So this is a big blow here for the Oregon Ducks heading into this contest. So for them, as we look at, you know, the season stats, Noah Whittington's their leading rusher. They still have him, but Jordan Davison is out for this game. Big bodied guy. You look at what he was able to do against Texas Tech. He carried the ball 15 times against Texas Tech and scored two touchdowns. So that's not nothing. Ran for 90 yards against against James Madison. So certainly something to keep an eye on there. We know that Daly is out for Indiana. What's interesting to note about this game, and we talked about our best bets on the Thursday podcast with Humans, and you know, that's the funny thing is you kind of try to find the times to bet these things, right? Oregon, Indiana opens, and my initial thought was I'm going to play under here, under 47.5. Market comes down. I'm like, all right, I'm on the right side of the movement, but we haven't recorded the betting pod yet. So we talked about it yesterday, and now the market is back at 47.5. So I like the under in this game. You are seeing a little bit of resistance, so a little over money coming in on Oregon and Indiana here. And, you know, something that Brett Ciancia pointed out in Pick Six previews this week was Indiana's slow pace, 63rd out of 68 teams in the FBS, or excuse me, in the Power Four. And Oregon is not Speedy Gonzalez. They're not Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich, Oregon, right? 49th out of 68 for Oregon heading into this game. So I'd still like the under, still played the first half under as well, which I think we gave it out at 23.5 yesterday, which is still, I believe, available at a number of sports books. Heavy juice at 24.5 at FanDuel. Probably wouldn't lay a $1.54 on under 24.5, but we'll see if we get some 23.5s out there. You know, Miami and Ole Miss, I talked about playing the first half under. I played at 26.5. Right now, FanDuel heavily juiced 27.5 under, 25.5 out there in the market. I understand, and I've heard some really good points why to look over in this game. And, you know, was the first half under my favorite bet? Not necessarily. However, I do feel like this is going to be a game where things could open up more so in the second half. That's just my gut feel, kind of like what we saw in the Sugar Bowl. Now, historically speaking, Fiesta Bowls tend to be over games, ideal conditions, beautiful grass they bring in from outside. So there's going to be no issues from a condition standpoint in this game, either game, right? Both games will be indoors. But I think Miami is going to try to play a little bit of keep away here against Ole Miss, and that's why first half under for me was the look as opposed to full game under. Lastly, I wanted to point out, and I'm not a big prop guy, but I think I'll get involved. And by the way, just a quick reminder, VSiN Primetime will be live on the air during the Fiesta Bowl on Thursday night. So 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern time, SiriusXM channel 158, the VSiN Watch app, YouTube TV. So me and Matt will be on the air prior to the game, during the game, giving some thoughts in game, if there are some in game angles. You know, we think back to the Sugar Bowl. Matt and I both thought there was a good opportunity to grab some Ole Miss, you know, north of two touchdowns. Probably should have thought to grab them money line as well. But that all being said, there is one prop that it's kind of a fun one that I'm gonna play here. FanDuel has it, and you know, look around and see what the numbers are. I'm gonna go Carson Beck over rushing yards. It's 5.5. And look, when you're talking rushing yards for quarterbacks in the Ole Miss Miami game, I think most of us would think Trinidad Chambliss. And I'm not saying not to play Trinidad Chambliss, but you know, that's sitting at 23.5. Carson Beck is sitting at 5.5. And this isn't a guy that has utilized his legs all that much. That said, we saw him get out and extend the chains against Ohio State. And I don't know if this Ole Miss defense is going to be able to get after Carson Beck a ton. Now, remember, when you're playing player props in college football, especially at the quarterback position, as we all know, sacks go against your rushing numbers. So that is always a concern. If you look at his game log this year, he's got a handful of games with negative rushing yards. Notre Dame, Florida, Florida State, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, Texas A&M, all negative rushing yards in those games. But when you look at some of the numbers, my buddy Jeremiah passed these along. He's a Miami fan, so you know, take that for what you will. Ole Miss 84th in pass rush. Miami number one in pass block. So I don't know how much Ole Miss is going to be able to get home on Carson Beck. And what we saw from Carson Beck, and I know Matt was a bit critical of his play so far during the postseason, I would push back a bit. I think he's done what he's had to do, which is avoid the mistakes. Now, I do think some mistakes could be coming in that game, maybe in the second half, if Ole Miss is able to find some success with Trinidad Chambliss in this electric offense. Is Miami going to have to be more aggressive? That's why I look more first half under as opposed to full game under, because I think the game script can play out a little bit more Miami's way, and then things get more ad-libbed in the second half, just the way I'm envisioning it to happen. But I think Carson Beck over 5.5 rushing yards is going to be another play that I'm going to be sweating out Thursday night on VSiN primetime. All right, before we hit a break, just a reminder, our friends over at Rainbow Athletics have been a proud sponsor of the podcast all year long, and they're right now looking more at their Tokyo Tow line. Kansei Matsuzawa, who was one of the great stories of the college football season, and the Tokyo Tow line is a great little thing to have in your back pocket when it comes to being a college football fan. So just a reminder, you've seen the kicks, you felt the energy, now it's time to wear it. The official Tokyo Tow gear inspired by the Lou Groza finalist and consensus All-American Kansei Matsuzawa. From bold tees to clean hoodies, every piece brings the same focus and drive Kansei showed on the field. Show your pride, show your passion only at TokyoToe.com. That's TokyoToe.com. TokyoToe.com. Gear up and own the moment. By the way, Dan Rubenstein of the Solid Verbal Podcast, when he jumped on, he immediately said, "Hey, man, like the hat you're wearing." Yes, the Rainbow Authentics hat. I've been donning it all year long. You can check out all what they have to offer over at rainbowauthentics.com as well. All right, quick break. When we come back, Wes Reynolds, and then after that, Brett Ciancia. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And we're back after a brief open and joined by the happiest man in all of Las Vegas, the one and only Hoosier Wes, Wes Reynolds. Wes, you know, as a fan of teams, you think back to the happiest you've been in an arena, in a stadium. And, you know, I certainly have some, you know, positive memories, but it's not about me. My team's not playing right now. Your team just went to the Rose Bowl for the first time since 1967, won a bowl game for the first time since the early 90s, and not only won it, absolutely curb stomped the face of college football, if you will, from a program standpoint, the last two decades. Explain and relive the scene at the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day.
Yeah, it was a scene, Tim, and it was a very long day. those of us getting up very early in the morning to go to parade, walking through downtown Los Angeles at about 6 o'clock in the morning to catch that train to Pasadena, and soaked at the Rose Parade. But I'm glad I went. It was a great experience. Unfortunately, it wasn't sunshiny like we usually watch it on television every single year. But sun did come out for the Rose Bowl game, and we had good weather. Didn't rain on us, and didn't rain on Indiana either. I think Indiana is who made it rain on Alabama, and got into the game, and they got off to that shaky start. Mendoza gets sacked twice on the first drive, and it's like, okay, you know, it's the Rose Bowl, guys, settle in. And I thought that they'd be a little bit nervous on that first drive, but after that, it was like, okay, here we go. They settled for three on the next drive, and it was one-way traffic throughout, and it was one-way traffic really in the stands too. It was at least 80-20 Indiana to Alabama. You just didn't see a lot of, and maybe because Alabama had been there before, and maybe because they thought, despite what you heard online and on social media, that they were going to get beat. And get beat they did, and got beat very handily. This was over, you know, mid-third quarter, and just to see everybody stay, you know, not only for the rest of the game, but for the post game and all of that, it couldn't have gone better for Indiana's return to the Rose Bowl for the first time since 1968. So, you know, leaving the stadium, it's kind of like, okay, this is gravy, man. We won the Big Ten title. We won the Rose Bowl. But then you get to that Queen song. When Queen went away for a few years, the band, after a few years, they came back and they had a song that went, I want it all. I want it all. I want it all. And I want it now. And that's, I think, how Hoosier fans are feeling right now. Hey, we're two games away from winning a national championship. Let's finish the job here. But first things first is a very good Oregon team and what is a quote unquote revenge spot for them from October 11th. So this is going to be a war, Tim. I think we know that, and it's priced accordingly.
Yeah, no, it's didn't have Wes singing Queen on my list today, but we've had
The vocal talents of Freddie Mercury, unfortunately.
We've had some ABBA and now some Queen, and we didn't get any Christmas ditties this year. So we let the people down. But, you know, before we get to the game.
I can do Devil Went Down to Georgia if you want, Tim.
You will be going down to Georgia, but you will not. I don't deem you a devil. You're more an angel in my mind. But before we get to the game on Friday, you were in Autzen. By the way, apparently you have season tickets to Indiana because you have been to every game. But you were up in Autzen.
Yeah, I go to every game, but in Bloomington.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But this was a spot, Wes, where, you know, thinking back to it, there were some, sharp folks that thought Oregon was the right side coming off a bye. And it was a dominant performance by Indiana. The game got a little squirrely there in the fourth quarter. But take us back to that October afternoon. You were there in attendance at Autzen Stadium as your Hoosiers went there. I'll be honest, this was their first real past test under Kirk Cignetti, right? They've obviously exceeded expectations, but this was the first test that they aced. And obviously since then, they aced the Big Ten Championship, A pluses across the board for the Rose Bowl. But this was the one where I think most people were like, okay, this is different. This is different this year. So take us back to October 11th and that scene and that game where Indiana won.
Yeah, and the tone, I think, really got set from the first play of the game. Now, didn't know what the result was going to be after just one play, but Dante Moore, first play, gets sacked for 7 yards, and that was kind of the theme of the game because Indiana got 6 sacks on Dante Moore, and this is a guy that does not get sacked very often, and Indiana just brought the pressure, and you could see, Tim, I think, as the game went along, you could see that Indiana was just a little bit better at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, really, offensively and defensively. And Indiana didn't run the ball great, but they ran it well enough where they would get him into third and shorts. And that's what they've been really all year. They're number one in third down, basically, across all of college football when you add it all together. And that's what you saw. They were able to get in like third and manageables and make those third downs and keep the drives going. And they finished drives and Oregon really didn't. Because we talked about it a few weeks ago, or the podcast we did after that game when I got back. Uh-huh. Shout was a little bit subdued at the end of the third quarter in Autzen Stadium. They were kind of worried. And then all of a sudden, Fernando did throw a pick six, a rare mistake and a rare turnover from Fernando Mendoza. And then all of a sudden they got back into it. And what's Indiana do? They go right down and score. You know, like nothing fazed these guys. It was like, okay, this is a different team here. This is a team that you can trust, you know, when it gets, you know what, cutting time. And they basically, you know, have shown that all year, I think, in these clutch situations.
So let's get to Friday night. You'll be there. Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Atlanta, Georgia. Indiana right now, 3.5-point favorite. Might head back to 4. There's some juice 3.5s out there. We've seen some over money actually come into the market. I addressed that in the open. I bet under 47.5 at open and went down to 46.5. Now it's back to 47.5. It's funny because Matt and I were talking about this yesterday on the podcast and also on primetime. You know, the Indiana bandwagon was pretty quiet for a long time. And now it's you're looking to your right, Wes. You're looking to your left and everybody's kind of squeeze it in next to you. You used to be able to spread your legs out and you had all the room in the world. And now you're on an economy.
That's
flight.
How I felt at the Rose Bowl.
So
that's how I felt at the Rose Bowl with those tight seats.
Well, I mean, that's the bandwagon right now. So before we get into the X's and O's, what people really want to hear, how are you feeling that the hottest team in the country and everyone's believing in them are your Indiana Hoosiers?
I kind of want to keep this juju away. I kind of want to be underestimated, to be honest with you, a little bit more. And it's like each and every time, Tim, they slowly get some converts. You know, they got some converts. It really started probably with the Iowa game and then the Oregon game. It's like, okay, you know, let's beat a team that's dynamic and the flashy Oregon Ducks. And then they did that. And you started to get some more, you know, like, okay, something's going on here. And then against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, and before that, even Penn State, you know, when they pulled it out so late with the Super Cooper, Amari Cooper's great catch in the back of the end zone. But then the Big Ten title game, but you still had quite a few doubters, even like, no, okay, now what are you going to do with almighty Alabama here? And Alabama, I know, wasn't up to the usual standard, but they still went 11-4. And they still won a game in the playoff, and they still beat all of their rivals. They swept all of their rivals, by the way, in the regular season. So it's not a bad season for Alabama. And Indiana just toyed with them. You know, it was just like, you know, who are these guys? It felt like you were playing a group of five opponent. They were just dominating these guys. And now you're starting to get converts. You're still going to get disbelievers, though, because people are going to be stubborn, Tim, because, you know, we're human beings. We don't want to admit when we're wrong. Right. So there are still going to be people saying, OK, this is where Indiana's going to get got. But that's the thing about being a better, too. And you know this as well as I do and as well as any of the audience does. Sometimes as betters, we can be stubborn. It's like, OK, this is where the streak, because we often try to stop that streak. Right. We know the spot to get in front of it. Okay, this is where it ends. I'm not doing that here with Indiana. I'm not doing that with Kurt Cignetti. The guy's 25-2. He hasn't given me any reason to doubt him. As much as I respect Oregon and as much as I respect Dan Lanning, you know, I'm not getting in front of Indiana. And yeah, as a fan, am I a little nervous? Of course I'm nervous. We're that close now, but I have no reason to get in front of Indiana.
All right, so let's get into this game. We've talked about it briefly. Oregon losing against Indiana, and I would say the score was not as close as that game played out. Obviously, you had the pick six, which skews things a little bit. Let's look at the total first, 47.5. So I bet under 47.5, as I mentioned. I think this is going to be a war. Took a little first half under as well. Oregon is not Chip Kelly Oregon. They are not frantic pace anymore. They're not snail, but they're you know, they'll keep it slow. And then you look at Indiana, and they're one of the slower teams in college football. When you look at this total, Wes, what's your kind of feel on how this game ultimately plays out from a scoring standpoint?
I understand a little bit for the over money because it is now in an indoor track down in Atlanta. And, you know, Oregon is known for speed and, you know, especially at the receiver position. So I understand that. It is hard for me to support that, though, when I look at what Indiana's defense has done. When you look at the three teams, the three of the top eight, and that means, you know, the eight that made the quarterfinals here in the tournament. And that's Oregon, Ohio State, and Alabama held Oregon to 13 points, held Ohio State to 10 points, held Alabama to 3 points. So not a math major, but under 9 points a game is pretty darn good. And just looking at what Brian Haynes has done, Brian Haynes, I think, is one of the better coordinators in all of college football. The defensive coordinator for Indiana, and there's a reason why they're paying him like $3 million now, because he comes up with these schemes and he brings these different pressures. You know, sacking Sayan five times in the Big Ten championship game. They got after Ty Simpson, and they bring him from sometimes they'll get pressure with the front four, but then sometimes they'll bring blitzers. They'll bring a Devin Boykin or D'Angelo Pons, by the way, the little corner that all the Alabama are saying, hey, attack that little guy. It was him that was doing the attacking because he laid the wood on Ty Simpson, eventually knocked him out of the game. So I think when I look at this from the first game, the big chief question for me on the Oregon side is how are they going to run the ball? Because I think they have to run the ball to win. Because if you're putting Moore in those situations, he can get pressured and has at times wilted under pressure against the better defenses that he's played this year. So, you know, Oregon, I believe they're now down to two healthy running backs, Tim, because Davison, of course, it got announced yesterday that apparently he has a broken clavicle and he's not going to go. And then Lamar went into the transfer portal. So you got like two healthy running backs for Oregon. Yep. So that's going to be tough for them to move the ball, in my opinion.
Yeah, Jordan Davison leads Oregon with 15 rushing touchdowns on the season, second on the team in carries and rushing yards, and he is out for the semifinal. So, yes, certainly a big loss there, and does limit Oregon, no doubt, when it comes to the rushing attack. For Oregon to have success in this game, Wes, what are the weaknesses on this Indiana defense?
It's tough to really find one, but they do have a tendency. They can give up some explosives in the passing game a little bit. Now some of those are when the game was decided, because Alabama, when they had the backup in there, he hit a couple passes down the field on Indiana, and then Indiana stiffened and Alabama couldn't really continue the drives. But that's something I think you definitely want to look at with Oregon, and they can be dangerous. They can hit deep balls on this team, but there's not a ton of weaknesses with Indiana. Number one, they're very good against they're one of the best against the run. In pressure rate, I believe they're fourth in the country at over 40%, and they tackle well. That is something I noticed just watching the game up close, and I've noticed it throughout the year, but when you're watching and, you know, dismissing all the atmosphere and all the hoopla around you, and you're just watching how this team pursues defensively. Like this, it sounds very simple, Tim, but they tackle well. They don't miss tackles, Indiana. You don't see them, you know, giving up a lot of yak and a lot of, you know, running backs breaking, you know, to the second and third level on this team because Indiana tackles well. Aiden Fisher, the All-American, number four linebacker for Indiana, who is one of six guys that came in from James Madison with him. That guy never misses a tackle. Every single time he's pursuing and he's taking proper angles, he's not over pursuing and he's making those plays every single time. And you just see that with this team. And that's why they make you earn it. And that's why they don't give up a lot of points and a lot of yards, because they make you earn it. They don't give up necessarily the big play, with the exception of, you know, there's a couple in the passing game I mentioned, but they have the ability to stiffen. But that is something that certainly is a concern.
All right, let's flip to the other side. Oregon's defense was very strong against Texas Tech. I think exposed Texas Tech and led to, if they weren't going to do it already, they decided to spend the big dollars and go get Brendan Sorsby to be their next quarterback down there. So they made Baron Morton's life a living hell last week down there in Miami. This Oregon defense against the Indiana offense, of course, led by Fernando Mendoza, plenty of weapons all over the place. What's the path to success for Indiana offensively against Oregon's defense?
They got to run the ball a little bit better with Hemby and Kalon Black, and that's what they did. I felt that they were going to win against Alabama and that they were going to cover. I did not expect this margin of victory, and the reason why we got this margin of victory is because they ran the ball. They ran the ball right down Alabama's throat, and it's like, okay, you know, Alabama's getting the Overton kid back, and he's their best run stopper. Didn't matter. I don't even know if I heard his name called necessarily in the game. Just the rushing attack. Even though all the touchdowns, for the most part, were passing, look, Indiana ran the ball 50 times for 215 yards. Fernando Mendoza only had to throw the ball 16 times. Granted, you know, he threw three touchdown passes, but Indiana could run the ball on these guys. Now, one thing I want to see is if they have maybe some design runs for Mendoza. And Mendoza is not, I would call, a great runner, but he's good enough and he's athletic enough. And there were times he was pressured and he was able to get out of the pressure and he was able to extend drives. And then you had Kalon Black with 99 yards and a touchdown, Roman Hemby with 89 yards and a touchdown. So if they can run the ball just a little bit better, because they only ran it, I think they might have been right at like 3.0 up there in Oregon. If they can run it just a little bit better and get it, you know, 3.5, 3.7, 3.8, they don't have to run it great. They just have to run it good enough. So I think that's going to be a key. And then I think a guy that really wasn't a factor in that Oregon game, Charlie B from Nashville, Tennessee. Charlie Becker, sure, all of a sudden has become a weapon. We know about Surratt. He was the guy that I think won them the Oregon game with all those back shoulder throws. Omar Cooper Jr. is back. But Charlie B is a guy that now they have a lot more confidence in his coming out party. You started to see it a little bit before, but the coming out party was against Penn State. And now he is an absolute weapon that Oregon is going to have to account for.
All right, Wes, how are you betting this game? Anything on the side or total for you as you head down to Atlanta?
I bet Hoosiers money line just didn't mess around with the points. I think another way to attack that, if you don't want to do that, is maybe bet Oregon team total. What I think it's under 21 and a half as we're recording right now, because if that's going to happen, I think the Ducks offense is going to be in trouble. And I need to believe it when I see it that Oregon can run the ball here consistently. And I just don't know that they can. And if you're doing that with Moore, as great as Dante Moore has been, a lot of those numbers have been against some of the subpar competition. If you go look at his numbers against Iowa, go mm-hmm. look at his numbers against Indiana. When he's played the elite defenses, been relatively pedestrian, even a little bit against Penn State as well. So that's something I think to definitely look at here. So Indiana on the money line, if you want to go Oregon team total under, I don't disagree with that route either.
All right, let's get to the other one. It'll actually be the appetizer to Friday night's main course, if you will, Miami and Ole Miss, the surprising of the two semifinals, no doubt. Miami, I think all of us liked them catching the points. I don't know if many of us thought they would win the game outright. Ole Miss, to me, surprised me, and pleasantly, I would say, in the regards of just how the game played out, not pleasantly for my bankroll, but Ole Miss catching three and a half, depending on what side you like. Total 52 and a half. Wes, how are you looking at this game? And is there anything you're looking to bet in the Fiesta Bowl on Thursday night?
Yeah, I like Ole Miss getting the 3.5, and there's still some of them out there. And credit to both of these teams, because I think they've both been very impressive. The one of the quarterfinals I got wrong was actually Ole Miss, because I thought Georgia was going to be able to put them away in the second half, and Georgia couldn't stop them. And that's a credit to Trinidad Chambliss and the entire offense and the offensive staff that's without Lane Kiffin. And look, I'm not the biggest Lane Kiffin guy, but he's a pretty good play caller. But they haven't missed it. They haven't missed him at all. I thought Trinidad Chambliss, and this was a guy, keep in mind, that was not the starter, transferring in from D2 Ferris State. It was Austin Simmons. And then he went and, the Wally Pipp effect, I guess, and got the job. And what I was really impressed with in that game, Tim, Trinidad Chambliss got pressured 12 times, never got sacked by Georgia. So he was getting pressured, but he was able to make the plays. And I think what the difference was, the hype has been all around Chambliss, and rightfully so. Ole Miss ran the ball very well. And I think 54.2% rush success rate here in the CFP, and Miami, that's where you can get Miami, I think, a little bit running the ball. Like, they can get pressure up front with them NFL defensive ends, but I worry a little bit about Miami against the run. And we know Ole Miss can hit explosives, and that's kind of maybe a weakness for Miami, is a little bit in the secondary. They kind of lack in the tackling department, and you can see busted tackles, and all of a sudden, a 15-yard play is going to the house for 70 yards. And you could see that here with Ole Miss. And then the Miami offense, are they going to be able to run the ball really consistently? I believe they're 5.1 yards a play in the CFP. That's the lowest. Now, to be fair, they've had the toughest road, right? With A&M and with Ohio State, but the other teams are over a yard per play better than them in the college football playoff. And I think that absolutely makes a difference. Ole Miss's defense on third down held up against Georgia. I think Georgia was 3 of 13. I was so impressed with them second time around in the adjustments that they made in that regard, and that they didn't get overpowered like they did in the first game, especially in the second half. So, Miami converted the third downs against Ohio State. And Ohio State, I thought, kind of got exposed a little bit against Indiana in terms of the offensive line. They got their butts kicked a second game in a row, because Indiana, I thought, really kicked their butts in Indianapolis, and Miami did the same. Can Ole Miss hold up? I think that they can. So I played Ole Miss plus 3.5. And if this is a shootout and the total 52.5, not super high, but certainly high, I think, for a playoff game based on what we've seen. Mm-hmm. If this is a shootout, I think that favors Ole Miss. I really do. I don't think Miami can go score for score with these guys, if that's what it's going to be. And we've seen in recent years at the Fiesta Bowl, now this probably isn't germane to this particular edition, but we've seen that these are shootouts. These are high scoring games in the Fiesta Bowl. And if that's what we're going to get, if that's going to follow pattern or follow suit from what we've had over the last recent years, then I think that favors the Rebels. And I also think chip on their shoulder, too. It's like, you know,
sure.
Lane Kiffin, you know, they're kind of a little bit of the underdog America story. You know, now Indiana, like, we're the big boy. We're not the cute, cuddly little story anymore. Now Ole Miss is. And, you know, because Lane Kiffin, I think, is a very good villain. And they've rallied around that. You know, what coaches are going to be coaching, what's not. And sometimes you get players, you know, that get together and they're like, F it, man. Doesn't mean nothing. You know, we're just going to go ball out and we're just going to play and do what we do. And I think Ole Miss has taken the right attitude and the right approach in that regard.
Yeah, no doubt. There's been some shots fired at Lane Kiffin. Trinidad Chambliss staying next year. Hopefully he gets that waiver for a sixth year. Kawan Lacey announced he's coming back. So, yeah, it's a lot of storylines there. And I think you're right. I think they have kind of become America's team of the four remaining. Not that people are anti-Indiana, but I think the Cinderella story, you will, the middle finger to Lane Kiffin is leading towards the casual, maybe being more on the Ole Miss side. Wes, always appreciate it, man. Have a great trip, and we'll talk next week, maybe with Indiana playing for a national championship.
From your lips to God's ears, Tim. Hopefully that happens. Go Hoosiers.
There he is. At Wes Reynolds 1, wrapping it up like he's on the coaching staff with a little Go Hoosiers there. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Brett Ciancia joins us right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we keep things rolling as we always do. We're back to a little bit of more of a normal schedule. We had Wednesdays with Wes, and now joined like we were all throughout the regular season on Wednesdays by Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, Pick Six Plus, the stat packet that you must have, even with a couple games left. Brett, always love jumping into how games graded out for you. So before we look ahead, let's look slightly back, and we'll go in chronological order. Miami's win over Ohio State. How did that game grade out for you? And was that one of Miami's better performances of the year based off of your numbers?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Tim. A really exciting quarterfinal round. It all kicked off on New Year's Eve, and you saw that Miami defensive line really take over the game. I mean, Reuben Bain, Hakeem Mezidor, they were game wreckers. That was one of the keys of the game, was that defensive line getting Julian Sain off his spot, getting him rattled, and really didn't look himself the whole game. That and then the offensive line got enough push to keep them ahead of the chains. A lot of third and manageables that Miami was able to execute. They went 7-for-14, which doesn't sound that great, 50%, but against the nation's number one defense, Ohio State, that was critical. So in terms of game grade, yeah, it was the second highest game grade of the playoffs, of the quarterfinal round, behind this incredible Indiana performance, which, spoiler alert, was the number one game grade, not just of this round, but the entire 2025 season. Historic levels of game grade. So, but yeah, Miami, strong performance, got the outright upset, and they head into the Final Four with a decent shot at a national title.
You know, a lot of people discussed Oregon and were questioning their defense because of the late points that were scored by James Madison. And I don't know if it was more of a dominant defensive performance or just Texas Tech's ineptitude offensively, but very impressive to see what Oregon was able to do down in Miami on New Year's Day. I know that was a disappointing result for you, Team Texas Tech, that you've been high on, and I think rightfully so, a team that was 12-1 against the spread heading into that game on New Year's Day. But how did that game grade out for you? And we'll start with Oregon before we get to Texas Tech. You know, what jumped out to you from Oregon? And do you still have some questions about their offense? Because, boy, it didn't really get it going in gear against a pretty darn good defense though in Texas Tech.
So this one shocked me half the game. You know, I think when in the matchup of Oregon's offense versus Texas Tech's defense, I feel like I nailed it to a T. I went back and looked at Oregon against their four hardest opposing defenses, and they were significantly held below their season averages. I mean, they were held to under 20 points almost every time. So I felt the Texas Tech's defense would have the advantage. They held them really to 9 points, if you think of it. I mean, one touchdown was off of a short touchdown drive off of Barry Morton's fumble. The other one was in garbage time with 15 seconds left. So Texas Tech's defense came to play as I thought they would. Now, the other side of the game, I whiffed on that one. I thought the Tech's offense would have some success against a Duck defense that just gave up 34 to JMU. So instead, Dan Lanning and Tosh Lapoy, they brought an A-plus game here, pitched a shutout on Texas Tech. You never see that team that was averaging 42 a game. And really, I'd never seen Barron Morton look like that. He looked rattled beyond belief, like just almost like he was sick or just like totally rattled. I never seen them play like that. So credit Oregon. They really bounced back after that opening round defensive performance. They look like a national title contender too. I'm going to be saying that a lot this episode, but yeah, incredible defensive performance by Oregon.
Yeah, and we will dive into Indiana-Oregon, the Friday night game down in Atlanta. But let's get to the game that you already alluded to, the historical performance from Indiana, 38-3, sheer dominance from this Indiana team. And I don't think many people have questions anymore regarding Indiana and what they're capable of doing. And they answered a lot of those questions in October when they went to Autzen. They answered more of those questions when they won the Big Ten championship and then hammered any doubt home with that dominant performance from against Alabama. So you already alluded to it. How impressive was that performance from Indiana based off of your numbers?
Yeah, per game grader, the number one overall game of the entire 2025 season. Very impressive. Both sides of the ball dominant. You know, this is the historic Alabama program, the 21st century dynasty, and it looked like Indiana was doing to them what Alabama had done for 20 years to other teams, just fully thorough physical domination, both sides of the ball. So it graded out perfectly, really. Looking back at the game, what caught my eye was late in that fourth quarter, they were already up by 35. Kurt Cignetti was still laser focus, the attention to detail, never stopping. So that reminded me of Saban himself, you know, the way that he was, you know, didn't crack a smile till the clock said zero. So very impressive with them. Yeah, I mean, the defensive line took over. They neutralized Ty Simpson. They neutralized the Alabama run game. We thought that would be a problem for Alabama running the ball. It's been a problem all year. But to neutralize the Simpson passing attack was impressive. And yeah, never let their foot off the gas. I did like that they gave the MVP over to Pat Coogan to represent the offensive line. You know, Mendoza gets the Heisman accolades and all the pub, but really a team effort. And that no one else describes it better than Indiana. It's like a full, you know, team effort, both sides of the ball. So perfect performance.
Yeah, it's funny. Last year in the playoffs is when Pat Coogan went viral with some of his pregame pep talks at Notre Dame. Four quarters of bleep you football. He said the bleep. I'll leave it out there for all the children listening right now. But he carried that over. And this has been an incredible team and how well they've been put together here. And we'll get into that game on Friday night here in just a moment. But let's wrap up just how your grades came out with the most entertaining, at least from a point standpoint, game of the quarterfinal round. I got to tip my cap to you. You called an outright upset here with Ole Miss. I thought you were a little bit crazy, and at the end of the day, you were on it. Trinidad Chambliss was unbelievable. Ole Miss showed a lot of resilience, and Kirby Smart had won 75 straight games when having a fourth quarter lead. That streak came to a close. 53 straight wins leading at halftime. That came to a close. So for Ole Miss, offensively, it was a masterpiece from Trinidad Chambliss. How did this game grade out for you?
Yeah, really great response by Ole Miss's offense when they were down. It was 14-12, and then Kewon Lacy fumbled the ball, and Dalen Everett took it back for a touchdown. 21-12, they're down by 9, all the momentum with Georgia. A lot of teams would have folded there, especially a team without a head coach and all the drama they've been through. Instead, they like bonded tougher together, and they came out in the second half, totally focused and aired it out on offense. Trinidad Chambliss, another 300-yard game. Unbelievable scramble ability at times. It looked like the old NFL films, Fran Tarkenton scrambling in the backfield there. Just incredible scrambling to extend plays. And then that last drive to hit Dazon Serbling for the 40-yarder to set up the field goal. How about that kicker, too? Three field goals over 50 yards. That was a difference in the game. And then timely defense when they needed it. But really, it was all about the Ole Miss offense going above what Georgia tended to allow on average. So when you see the game grades there, they're all in the green, outperforming what Georgia had allowed up to that point. So tremendous ability by that offense.
Well, fun New Year's Eve into New Year's Day. And now we turn the page to the final two games. Well, not the final two games, two of the final three games of the season. And let's go in chronological order. We'll start in the Fiesta Bowl. Both these point spreads pretty short, which is fun to see. You don't like to see lopsided numbers this day and age. So right now, as we look at the betting market on Wednesday morning, as we're recording this, mostly 3.5s out there in favor of Miami. Circa still sitting at 3, South Point at 3, and then a total of 51.5 or 52. How do you see this game playing out? And I guess, how does Ole Miss's elite offense match up against Miami's elite defense?
Yeah, I mean, that's the story of the game, strength versus strength. I can't wait to see it because what you have with Miami's defense, we've seen it now two rounds in a row against A&M. They neutralized Marcel Reed, more of a dual threat, probably a better comp here to Chambliss given his mobility. And then they went out and did it again to Julian Sain and the Buckeye offense. So, I think it's all about Miami's defense this week. You know, I went out on a limb with Ole Miss last week, despite all the coaching drama. I can't ride with them again. And it's not even really because of the coaching thing. I think that's a distraction and all, but this is more about the personnel that Miami has. Both lines of scrimmage are going to tilt Miami's way. I can see Ruben Bain and Mezador disrupting Chambliss in the backfield, but also give credit to Miami's secondary. They're top five in passing defense. They're going to hold their coverage long enough to let that defensive line get after Chambliss. And I do like their team speed as well on defense, where if Chambliss starts scrambling, Miami has enough speed and athleticism to keep him in check. So I think Miami wins that strength on strength, but the difference becomes even wider on the other side of the ball when you're talking Miami offense versus Ole Miss defense. I think the Ole Miss defense is statistically the weakest unit left in the bracket. They're down at 39th out of 68 Power 4 teams in my defense number, 55th out of 68 in the rushing defense. So I think Mark Fletcher and that offensive line, they're going to get their due. They're going to get their 150, 200 yards, stay ahead of the chains like they did against Ohio State. So I'm going to go with the overall team there with Miami. I'm going to go Miami to win, to cover. I have them 31-26. It is interesting the pace of play in this one. You have Ole Miss is one of the fastest in the country. Miami, one of the slowest, a bottom five slowest team. So how are those styles going to contrast? I think at the end of the day, you're going to have Miami cover. And I have it slightly going over. I've got 31-26. So that would compute a 57 points there.
Yeah, I played first half under in this game, and I think the tempo is what I'm so curious about. You know, does Miami try to play a little keep away? We saw a couple of those drives against Ohio State where they really kind of suck the life out of you, and when you're Ole Miss and you've got let's call it what it is, a superstar in Trinidad Chambliss on the sidelines. You want him on the field as much as possible. So I do wonder if Shannon Dawson's game plan is kind of 3-4 yards at a clip. You mentioned Mark Fletcher. You know, this is a guy that has really stepped up here in the postseason. And is he the kind of key to success here offensively for Miami? You know, I've heard some people say, well, they weren't that impressive against Ohio State. Well, no one really is impressive against Ohio State. So I actually thought they were impressive offensively, Brett, against Ohio State because that defense is so good. But is Mark Fletcher kind of the straw that stirs the drink on Thursday night for Miami?
Well, I think their biggest X factor is Malachi Toney on the outside, and they really have him in a do-it-all position. I mean, they get him the ball 10, 15 times a game, not just through the air. They get him on end-arounds. They put him at Wildcat. So he's really their X factor. But I have what teams end up doing is they end up trying to neutralize Toney. Then you need a secondary and third guy to step up. That's where Fletcher starts to get into motion there in the second halves of games, get behind the big offensive line, churn out some yards, and like you said, churn that clock, too. That's going to be huge. So I'm looking for a big game from Fletcher. Even some secondary receivers like Keelan Marion, I think, are going to be important in this one because I do think they're going to try and neutralize Toney. But yeah, Carson Beck, I mean, you know, he's not the most mobile guy, but he can tuck the ball down. He can lower the shoulder. As long as they keep him in third and manageable, that was what they did against Ohio State. Nobody had done that all season. So that's why I am impressed with Miami's performance. The score might not indicate it. You know, the offense scored just 17 points when you take out the pick six. Really, it was like 10 points if you take out the, you know, the garbage time touchdown at the end when Ohio State let them score. But still, on a play-to-play efficiency basis, I was really impressed with Miami.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Carson Beck because he had a couple of runs. He's not the most mobile guy, as you pointed out, but he had a couple of runs to kind of extend the sticks. I'd be curious if he does it again. His prop is 5.5 rushing yards at FanDuel. I am fascinated to see if Carson Beck kind of does what he did against Ohio State. Mark Fletcher, by the way, if you're wondering, these are courtesy of FanDuel, 88.5 rushing yards, and Trinidad Chambliss sitting there at 23.5. All right, Brett, let's turn our attention to the game that I think most of us were expecting. I guess I can't say most of us, but this isn't surprising. 6-10, Ohio, Ole Miss and Miami, that's surprising. Oregon and Indiana, not a stunner. Texas Tech and Oregon obviously was kind of a toss-up game heading into it last week. So we saw it back in October. Take us back real quickly to October. How did you grade that game out between Oregon and Indiana when Indiana, as around a touchdown underdog, went to Autzen and won 30-20?
Yeah, well, this is a rematch of that. And when you look back to the 30-20 game, remember that 7 points for Oregon came off a pick six. And Indiana was driving, would have made it even bigger of a score. But what happened after that was even more telling, where after the pick six, it looked like all the momentum in the stadium was heading towards Oregon. Indiana locked in like they have all season, very business-like approach. They locked in and led a long touchdown drive, very methodical, and punched it right in Oregon's face. So they're not phased. They don't get phased in tight games. If you're looking at the game grade from back then, it was a solid 93, which if you've been following along with Pick 6 Plus and Pick 6 Previews, right around 100 is like a really impressive game. So, yeah, one of the best games of the year, really. They held Oregon 3 yards per play under their average on offense, which, again, doesn't sound high, but that is extremely elite defensive performance by Indiana last time. So I see a similar type game. I think Indiana's defense will win that strength on strength. I think they're going to slow down Dante Moore, similar to how Texas Tech did, similar to how Iowa did, Wisconsin did it. So Oregon has had trouble against their top opposing defenses. But the difference comes on the other side of the ball, where I think that Indiana's passing attack with Mendoza, they're graded number one in my numbers for passing offense. They are going to get their yards and points against Oregon, unlike Texas Tech was unable to do last week. So I'm going to ultimately go with Indiana. And it's interesting with this. It's one of the best coaching turnarounds in college football history. We're all trying to figure out, what is he doing? You know, what's the secret sauce? A lot of it is, and I tried to figure this out too, he's never at the top of the recruiting rankings, never at the top of the transfer rankings. You know, they were like 25th or 30th. What it is, though, he's finding very veteran players. These guys are in their 6 years or 5th years, tons of career starts, tons of career snaps and stats. A lot of them followed him from JMU. It's like just a continuation of that program. So very interesting. Of course, he does have elite coordinators like all the good teams do. But it's something, some secret sauce he's got over there. But I think they're going to do it. They're the best coach team this year. The most well-balanced team and number one on my game grader now. They took over the top spot from Ohio State. So number one pick, I'm going to go Indiana here to cover and win. I've got in 23-17, so a win by 6 points.
All right, I like that final score, though. I do have a little bit on Oregon plus the points, but my favorite play is under in this game. So I'll trade off an Indiana win for an under to come home. Before we wrap up here, Brett, looking at these two teams, Oregon and Indiana, and something I've really loved taking a look at from your Pick 6 Plus is how have they played recently? So how have Oregon and Indiana, you mentioned Indiana's number one game grader all season. How have Oregon and Indiana played recently? How do your last four numbers spit out on these two teams?
Yeah, glad you brought that up. For the full season, it's now Indiana number one, Oregon number three. So you've got a 1-3 overall season. If you're looking just at the last four games, which me and Tim like to do, looking at a recent view, it's 1-2. It's Indiana number one, Oregon two, and a clear divide. I mean, this has the look of a national title game on paper when you're looking at stats, advanced stats. I mean, they're top 15 in every stat I could find, both teams. So there are really no weaknesses in this one. For instance, you got Indiana, the number six offense, going up against Oregon's number four defense. Flip side, you got Oregon's number four offense against the number 12 defense. I mean, it's just elite across the board. So I can't wait to see it. Like I said, has the feel of a national title game. I think you make the winner of this your favorite to win it all in the next round, the final round. So, you know, must watch TV Friday night.
Yeah, no doubt. Both these teams in the look-ahead lines are favorites against Miami and Ole Miss. Brett, always appreciate the insight. And just a reminder for folks, as before you know it, you're going to be turning things around and getting ready for the Pick 6 Previews magazine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really three games to go, and then all of a sudden it's trying to catch up on all this transfer portal madness that's been going on. I've been trying to look away and just let it all, you know, settle down before I dig in. But yeah, research starts mid-January, so we're almost there. Yep, there's the cover of 2025 right there. 2026 will be in motion soon. So if you're interested, follow me on Twitter, Pick 6 Previews. That's all spelled out, Pick 6 Previews. The website's pick6previews.com, and coming soon we'll have the links to buy 2026. And get in on 2026 Pick 6 Plus, the weekly stats and info package coming out every Tuesday. So, yeah, thanks so much. Three more games to go, and then it's the long off season of research, which I love. I mean, I love hunkering down, looking at every single team, but definitely a shift of the calendar going from playoff to off season mode.
Well, we're not done yet. We'll have one more preview with you next week for the national championship, of course. But Brett, appreciate the insight as always. Pick 6 Previews. Check out the website. Get the stat pack as well. I've been using it all year long. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Enjoy the games on Thursday and Friday. We'll be back on Monday. Thanks to Wyatt. Thanks to Ryan Hunter. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.